Hello everybody and welcome to the Asian Bankers webinar on Basel III and beyond, an overview and responses to regulatory changes. We have today Brian Lowe, who's head of market and liquidity risk at DBS Bank in Singapore and an adjunct associate professor at the Singapore Management University. We also have Shauna Chun, who is a senior solutions consultant for the Capital Markets Group in SunGard Asia Pacific and specialized in risk management within financial institutions. Shauna has helped many Asian banks achieve supervisory approval for use of their internal models, as well as implementing other Basel requirements and industry best practices in the areas of credit risk, market risk, and collateral management. My name is David Miller. I'm a risk management specialist based in London and also past COO of Premier, the global Risk Management Association. The areas for discussion today, we're going to look at the regulations, an overview of the regulations, and the status of those regulations, what the industry's response has been. We're also going to have a bank's view, the DBS perspective, on their response to the regulatory changes. The agenda, my introduction, which will be over in a second, and then Shauna Chun will look at the post-crisis regulations, implications, and the industry response to these. Copies of Shauna's slides will be sent out after this event. Brian will then talk about the impact of the banks and DBS's response, and we will then have a question and answer session. On your panel, you will see a chat box on the right, on the bottom right-hand side of your screen. You can input questions during the presentation, and you can also put questions in during the Q&A session that we'll be having. When you put your questions in, please select host and presenter and panelist from the options on the send to. And to conclude, I will have some concluding points, some comments at the end there, and we expect to finish within the hour. So without any further ado, I'd like to hand over to Shauna, who will give us an overview of the whole situation. Shauna, in your hands.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the next 20 minutes or so, I'll provide a brief overview of Basel III and some major regulations that have been introduced since the 2007 financial crisis. We'll look at the impact on banks, the status of the regulations, and this will be followed by a brief quiz. And I should mention that due to time, I won't be able to go into detail of all the slides, but the slides will be made available after the fact. So first things first, let's take a quick look at some of the reforms that we'll discuss today. There's the Basel, the global regulator that has introduced Basel 2.5, which adds more risk measures to the trading book. There's Basel III, which aims to address weaknesses found in Basel II during the financial crisis. And there are two consultative documents, the trading book and securitizations that some people have dubbed Basel IV. And there are also OTC derivatives reforms, specifically the G20 Accord, which mandates central clearing for all standardized OTC derivatives, as well as trade reporting to the repositories. There's the U.S. version, Dodd-Frank Act, and the European counterpart, EMIR, which stands for European Market Infrastructure Regulation. For the trading book, the acronyms that you should be familiar with respect to 2.5 is the stress VaR, SVaR, as well as IRC, or the incremental risk charge. And the incremental risk charge is looking at the credit risk in the trading books. And Basel 2.5 tries to build on Basel II. And Basel II has two sets of approaches to handling risk charges. There's
Can I just interrupt you a second? Your slides are not visible. You have to take control.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I have taken control. But I have taken control, actually. Can you see my slides now?
Yes, they're coming up now.
Okay, I apologize, people. So just to go back to where we were, okay, first things first, we have the Basel regulations. As I mentioned, Basel 2.5, it addresses market risk in the trading book. Basel 3, it aims to address weaknesses found during the global financial crisis. And we have two consultative documents, the trading book and securitization, that people are dubbing Basel 4. And in terms of OTC derivatives reforms, we have the G20 Accord, the Dodd-Frank Act, and the European version called EMIR. For the trading book definitions, the acronyms that you should be familiar with, SFAR for stress VAR, IRC for incremental risk charge. And I won't go into details here because we'll discuss them later on in the session. Basel 2.5 builds on Basel 2, and Basel 2 has two ways to approach risk and measure risk. There's a standardized approach and an advanced approach called the internal models approach for the market risk. There's also the new consultative document on the trading book, and what it is essentially a fundamental overhaul of how banks have measured risk to date. It plans to, or it proposes to, replace VAR with expected shortfall and make substantive changes to both the standardized and IMA approaches. Basel III acronyms. There are three major groups that you should be familiar with. First group, they relate to CCR, or counterparty credit risk. The main one is IMM, which stands for Internal Models Method, and this is the model's approach to measuring CCR. There's also EEPE, which stands for Effective Expected Positive Exposure, and this is an input into the model's approach. Next, there are the new liquidity rules, LCR and NSFR, which stand for Liquidity Coverage Ratio and Net Stable Funding Ratio. And we'll discuss these a little bit later. And the last group of acronyms, they relate to collateral, namely CCP, which stands for Central Clearing Counterparty, and there's IM and VM for Initial and Variation Margin. And why I bring these up is because CCPs demand a higher quality and quantity of margin. This, together with the liquidity risk rules, has resulted in what people are calling a collateral crunch. So depending on the source, there is effectively $1 trillion to $7 trillion U.S. dollar shortfall in high liquid assets. So if we take a step back, go back a few years, we saw the collapse or near collapse of some major financial institutions. And general consensus is it's blamed on three areas. One was the lack of liquidity, deterioration in credit worthiness, and the lack of transparency in OTC derivatives. So in response, the government and Basel introduced a slew of regulations. The Basel documents, they sum up to thousands and thousands of pages. And what I'll try to do next is summarize these Basel documents in 10 words or less. Reduced eligible capital plus higher RWA equals more regulatory capital. And that's exactly 10 words. If we use the Basel capital ratio formula, what we find is that in the denominator, RWA has increased because of the new charges from Basel 2.5 and Basel 3. And these primarily affect the trading book or OTC derivatives portfolios. In the numerator, we find that eligible capital has declined because of new deductions and exclusions. For example, Tier 3 no longer qualifies. On the right-hand side of the equation, we see that required capital has increased because of higher ratios and new capital buffers. So Basel 2.5, the four key areas to note, stress VAR. And stress VAR is essentially VAR during a 12-month stress period. There's also IRC, or the incremental risk charge, which is the credit risk in the trading book. And this only applies to IMA banks modeling specific risk. There's also a securitization charge and a comprehensive risk measure, or CRM, which applies to correlation trading portfolios. And CRM isn't relevant for Asian banks, so I won't go into too much detail. But what you should note is that these four elements actually triple the amount of risk charge in the trading book. We see that it impacts RWA, as noted earlier. In terms of Basel III, there are five key components. Firstly, there's a redefinition of capital, new exclusions, deductions, and higher ratios. And this affects both the numerator of the equation as well as the right-hand side. There are additional elements, the capital buffers. Basel's introduced what they call countercyclical buffers, and it tells banks to build up their capital during the good times to use during the bad times. There's also an extra buffer for SIFIs, or systemically important financial institutions, and there's a global variety as the domestic variety. And there are also the controversial liquidity ratios, which have contributed to this collateral shortage. There's LCR, which says that banks need to hold high-quality liquid assets so they can survive a 30-day stress period. There's also NSFR, which stands for Net Stable Funding Ratio, and it's a more medium-term measure. Basel now requires banks to have stable funding sources over a year-long period. And there's the inclusion of a non-risk-based measure, the leverage ratio, which tells banks that Tier 1 capital to total exposure cannot exceed 3%. And lastly, there are some major counterparty credit risk changes, notably CVA VAR. And CVA, it stands for Credit Value Adjustment, and it's the counterparty credit risk related to an OTC derivatives trade. Also, Basel requires stressed EEPE for the input for the model's approach to CCR, and there are incentives to clear trades via CCPs because the risk weights are substantially lower. For example, the risk weight is only 2 to 4% for clear trades versus, say, 20% for unclear trades. And this element affects the denominator of the equation. So next, let's look at the business impact on banks. The first four items, capital definition, capital buffers, leverage ratio, and liquidity ratio, they primarily affect a bank's strategy, and this has had the most impact on European and U.S. banks. And how they've responded is restructured their balance sheet and tried to cut down on RWA. For example, they've issued bonds such as COCOs or contingent convertible bonds to bolster their capital levels. They've sold off non-core businesses or areas that consume too much RWA. They've also cut back on lending, cut back on bonuses, and dividends. And what's most relevant for Asian banks are the last two items, the liquidity ratios and counterparty credit risk changes. And these are also considered the most difficult from an implementation perspective. And the reason is because it affects all areas of a bank. We're talking strategy, operations, the functional areas, and IT systems. And what we've seen Asian banks do, they've looked at improving their liquidity and funding sources. There's been a lot of emphasis on collateral transformation and optimization. We've also seen enhanced pricing and transition to more advanced risk-sensitive models. Next, let's take a look at the status of implementation of all these regulations. So going across the globe, starting from Canada, Canada is in very good shape. They Basel III went into effect at the beginning of this year. What we've seen Canadian banks do is upgrade to advanced models and focus a lot on collateral management and optimization. The U.S., they seem to be behind in everything. They just implemented Basel 2.5 this year when most countries implemented it at the beginning of last year. They've also now said that they're going to delay implementation of Basel III. The UK, they are very well prepared when it comes to liquidity risk, but they're a little slow in terms of living wills, such as the U.S. Actually, all the banks throughout the world, the SIFIs, the systemically important ones, they seem to be behind in the living wills. Switzerland, they have some of the toughest regulations when it comes to bank capital and time frames. And what we've seen the Swiss banks do is exit businesses that consume too much RWA, such as the fixed income, and we've seen also major job cuts by UBS and Credit Suisse. Europe, they've delayed Basel III following the U.S., and in Asia Pacific, what we find is a very heterogeneous bunch of countries. Korea, they're behind in Basel III. Central Clearing is also delayed. Japan, what we've seen is banks upgrading to advanced risk models and a big focus on collateral management and mandatory central clearing. China, they have delayed parts of Basel III so they can focus on the economy. And Southeast Asia, we see the most activity. We've seen banks upgrading their systems for counterparty credit risk, collateral management, focusing on optimization. We've also seen Malaysian banks and Singaporean banks building up their centralized data warehouses so they can calculate the more complex ratios demanded by Basel III. And Hong Kong and Singapore are both mandating central clearing. Australia, they are very well prepared for Basel III, and it went into effect the beginning of this year. Central clearing is not written in law because they think that market drivers will force banks that way, but they do require trade reporting. So the ink hasn't even dried on Basel III, and what we have are even more regulations proposed by the Basel Committee, what they call Basel IV. Firstly, there are the trading book reviews, which wants to overhaul the way market risk has been measured for the past 15 years or so. Namely, excuse me, my computer seems to be stuck. Apologies. Going back to the trading book review, what Basel wants to do is replace VaR with expected shortfall. So instead of looking at the loss for a 99% probability, they want to focus on the tail end or the 1% probability. They also want to redefine the trading book and banking book so it makes it more difficult to switch assets between the two. They also want to introduce a floor for IMA based on the standardized approach. And they want a more granular way of approving IMA. So instead of looking at it from the trading book level, they want to look at it from the trading desk portfolio. Now there's the new securitization proposals, and what this plans to do is take already very complex rules and make it even more complicated. So what Basel's done is introduce these two alternatives to calculating the risk charges for advanced banks. And so what's interesting to note is that in both alternatives, they have this new term called the backstop concentration ratio approach, and it's considered a last resort before applying a punitive 1,250% risk rate. And depending on the feedback from the banks, Basel will decide on mandating alternative one or alternative two. There are also changes to the risk weight levels. And then most recently, earlier this month, we've seen Basel come out with the revised liquidity rules, focusing on the liquidity coverage ratio. What they've done is essentially diluted the rules from all sides. Specifically, we see that the numerator has increased substantially because of the inclusion of other assets. Namely, they've included this category called Level 2B, which now includes mortgage-backed securities, corporate debt, and equities that fall into certain categories of ratings. They've also decreased the denominator by relaxing the liquidity runoff rates. And then also they've changed the right-hand side of the equation by letting LCR fall below 100% during periods of stress. So what's next? We can expect to see more changes in the liquidity standards. Next will be the net stable funding ratio and possibly more changes to LCR. There are likely to be more changes to operational risk, especially given the trading losses from those rogue traders from UBS and SocGen, and most recently JP Morgan's $6 billion loss resulting from lax risk management. So what are the consequences of these regulations? Ultimately, more complexity, higher costs, and more demands on the bank staff and regulators. Just to give an example, JP Morgan plans to spend $3 billion U.S. dollars on what they say are 14,000 new requirements stemming from Basel III and Dodd-Frank. And banks now have to deal with more complex processes. For example, in terms of collateral, there's going to be a bifurcated model where there's bilateral trades as well as centrally cleared trades. And banks now have to deal with organizational politics. For example, the liquidity rules, they impact risk management, treasury, and finance. So it's up to senior management to decide who does what. There's also a lot of inconsistency and uncertainty in terms of the global regulations. There's inaction from some countries because they're waiting for the U.S. and Europe to finalize the rules so they can make their laws more consistent. And there's also important extraterritoriality issues. For example, Dodd-Frank, which is a U.S. law, impacts not only Asian banks here, but also the Asian subsidiaries operating in the U.S. And what about the unintended consequences? We have lending has gone down and it's hurting global economic recovery. Some banks are resorting to higher risk return activities to justify higher capital charges. And some banks are focusing more on compliance and RW mitigation instead of risk management. And this last item, RW mitigation, that was the crux of the problem with JP Morgan and its $6 billion loss. So I always like to summarize the, I guess, difficult presentation slides with a short quiz. So I call this a no-stress test because it's a self-quiz. So question number one. Post-crisis regulatory reforms primarily affect a bank's A, trading book, B, banking book, C, nonfiction book, and the correct answer is A, the trading book. Question number two, what does Basel III's controversial LCR mean? A, liquidity coverage ratio, B, let capitalism rule, C, lenders can't relax, and the correct answer is A, liquidity coverage ratio. Question number three, Basel's trading book review proposes to replace a VAR with A, expected shortfall, B, unexpected long tail, C, bank at risk, and the correct answer is A. Hopefully that was an easy A for everyone. I think by now we're all aware that history tends to repeat itself, and this is especially true of the financial crisis. So the next financial crisis is not a matter of if, but when, and so I leave an open-ended question. Which banks will be prepared for the next crisis? And in conclusion, I want to thank you for your time and apologies for the technical hiccups. And I wish you all a happy, prosperous, and crisis-free lunar new year. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lorna. I hope everybody passed the quiz without any problems. Without any further ado, I'd like to hand over to Brian Lowe from DBS, who's going to talk about his views and DBS's responses. Brian, across to you.
Okay. Thank you, David, and thanks, Shauna, for a very comprehensive summary of all the Basel III changes. So I think in the next few minutes, I will share with everyone, from the Asian Bank's perspective, the business impact of all these Basel III rules to Asian financial institutions, particularly banks. As you have seen in Shauna's slide, that I think in terms of capital, I think Asian banks, even before the crisis and after the crisis, are generally more well capitalized than their European or American counterparts, right? Whether you measure in terms of either RWAs or leverage ratios, Asian banks have no problem meeting more stringent capital requirements. And also in particular, you don't find Asian banks active in issuing so many hybrids or tier three instruments to capitalize themselves before the crisis. So in terms of the definition of capital, probably less impact, as well as the level of capital as well. However, we can see from some of the items that the Asian banks actually have no choice but just to have to add the capital demand up, right? And those are examples of the ABC charge or the CVAR add-on. And you also notice that for Asian banks, most of the banks actually are not on the advanced approach in terms of either rating models or internal models or AMA for operational risks. So the leeway for new charges like the CVAR in terms of using more advanced simulation-based methodology to bring it down, like recognition of netting, CSA, margin agreement, etc., are simply not available if the bank is still on a Basel II current exposure method, for example, for computation of the counterparty risk charge for computation for RWA. So again, it's basically a gap or jump in the capital requirement for Asian banks. But the fact that the way they manage the credit portfolio also we have taken a bit less of hedging for those exposures, so some kind of recognition in the advanced approach will not be benefiting for them anyway. Come to liquidity, I think this is the part that, again, most Asian banks would be concerned. Number one, because of the availability of high-quality liquid assets in this part of the world. It is actually well known that even for more developed nations like Australia or Singapore, the government securities issuance actually cannot meet the demand of the banks to come up with the HQLA requirement. Now, of course, with the relaxation of the new rules, more high-yield assets will be recognized, including equity, which actually improve the situation a bit, and we also see countries that are also changing their banking regulations, banking rules to allow cover bond, again, in the form of securitization assets. However, given priority treatment in terms of liquidity ratios under Basel, Singapore would actually follow very, very closely to allow, again, the banks to issue cover bonds, right? Once issuance is done, then other banks actually can potentially invest in those securities to meet the HQLA requirement. So in that sense, the problem is getting better. However, the infrastructure challenges are still around the corner. I think the Basel liquidity requirement essentially asks the banks to look at their internal data, the data for financial, for liabilities and for assets, very differently. Again, how to actually maintain and identify operating relationship from customers becomes very key. And that many, as we know, that the infrastructure projects are ongoing to meet all these challenges. Central clearing, again, this could be a move to make OTC derivative trading more transparent in terms of clearing the derivatives. For Asian banks that might not have a very active derivative business, or they might not see the benefit from engaging the clients in terms of derivative tradings, to just move everything to the CCPs. And some of the rulings and terms and conditions of the CCPs, for example, unlimited liabilities of their members, are still causing problems for foreign banks to sign off. That's currently the case with CCILL in India, for example. Fundamental review of the trading book. I think for most Asian banks, they're actually not internal model banks. The new changes under the standardized approach should be more of a challenge than the IMA rules. You can actually forget which part of the desk would be targeted to apply for an IMA application. However, you are supposed implicitly from the Basel paper that your standardized engine designed for the new rules should be ready to compute the whole market risk RWA on a daily basis. Because without those capacity, setting a floor on standardized is an empty word. So implicitly, the regulators is already suggesting whatever the standardized engine would be built, should be built by which department in the bank, that capacity has to be on a daily run. Again, it's a technology challenge for many banks who are actually running their standardized computation on a monthly basis. And we know that the new standardized rules will definitely be more risk sensitive than the current sets, right? Again, that requires investments and then more outputs from trading systems, etc., to fit into the standardized engine. So banks need to be careful that. The IMA rules itself are very, very complex, and from our understanding of industry bodies' discussion with the trading book group, for example, there are just far too many points that the industry might not be able to agree upfront with the committee. So again, there are lots of discussion going on. The committee, on the other hand, wants the industry actually to give feedback on their internal models, proposals, on and also ask the banks to prepare for more quantitative impact studies in this regard. Another point which is also arriving late, probably would come at some point, is actually the implementation of all these recovery and resolution analysis and plans. As we all know, the global CVs that actually has completed these plans can tell us actually they are very expensive to implement, especially for resolution plans, because you almost have to rewrite all your vendor agreements so that you can actually sell off some of your legal entities so that you can run off its own. And this is only one part of this very costly exercise. I think there's some of these requirements already actually come to Asia. So I think Asia banks are also willing to take a look at what's the best way to deal with these new requirements. I think the final point I would like to bring up to is I think a lot of concerns about the cost of these new regulations and how they are going to be passed on to the customers, to the end users. Again, different banks have their different strategies, and in terms of balance sheet, in terms of capital, in terms of the customer reach and products. I think at some point, some of the cost, as the banks are the most sensitive about pricing of products, pricing of liquidity, pricing of risks, some of these would lead to passing on to customers, maybe in part, maybe in full, and maybe in some other forms. Another part which is also changing, as we know that the Basel liquidity rules give quite a bit of flavor to stable deposits, sticky ones. And as we know that any price sensitive deposits are less sticky, so any competition on a supposedly sticky deposit pool would actually make it more price sensitive and probably would defeat the purpose of such liabilities in the role of prudent liquidity risk management. Again, all of these will not actually happen overnight, but I think in terms of the strategies, some institutions, some financial institutions might actually strategize themselves to actually take some advantage or some mitigation in preparations to some of these probably inevitable change of the environment of banking in Asia. So in terms of DBS view and responses to all these regulatory changes, I think we are not very different from other banks because we take them very seriously and we actually maintain a lot of dialogues with our regulators, both our home regulators and as well as the host regulator, in which we do have our subsidiaries and branches operating in this part of the world, to understand the expectation of the regulators and what are the response, especially to some of these consultations. For example, for the fundamental review of the trading book, we supported the evidence-based approach, and we stay with proper infrastructure, market risk engines, switching from VAR to expected shortfall. It's not the most difficult part. However, all the requirements of the different desk to be eligible for partial IM application could be very controversial, and that the regulators have to really make up their mind whether they are comfortable about products, about a particular desk cut that satisfies regulatory purpose, as well as how to really assess restrictions on diversification between either debt, physical debt, or risk types. And on top of it, the modeling of market liquidity horizon, again, is something that is very difficult to substantiate. And then there's also one very big difference between the way liquidity horizon is treated for this new expected shortfall versus the incremental risk charge approach. The incremental risk charge methodology assumes a constant level of risk, which means it's very much like a credit bar for the trading book. So it's actually run on a going concern basis. However, all the new metrics in the fundamental review of the trading book actually takes the view of a liquidation view, right? So it's actually a gone concern view. So just based on the approach itself, reconciling the IOC, which is part of specific risk approach under IMA, to this new proposal becomes a challenge to the Basel Committee. And on top of that, the proposal doesn't cover the Pillar 1 charge for interest rate in the banking book, which is another very big topic. I think Basel is going to form another working group to draft proposal on that. Again, there'll be uncertainty in terms of the overall Pillar 1 charge coming from market risk in that proposal. So I think we as the bank actually gave our feedback to the Basel Committee. We also gave responses to the consultation on intraday liquidity. Again, it's a very onerous requirement in terms of understanding the intraday timing of cash flows, important cash flows. I think in terms of data, in terms of reporting, all these would remain high challenges to banks. And we internally, again, we organize ourselves, again, in terms of risk governance to strengthen the oversight on balance sheet capital as well as an independent risk view. And I think that has been working well. So in terms of pricing of assets or liabilities through different understanding of the behavior of our funding sources and users, actually sharpened our internal fund transfer pricing mechanism. Again, this is our internal response to some of these pending changes from regulations. At the same time, we also invest in our infrastructures, both in terms of the data warehouse, data mart, a common data mart, so that the data, the golden copy of data, golden source of data, can be used for both finance and risk, capital, liquidity, and balance sheet planning purposes. So again, quite a bit of projects ongoing to enhance our capacity to meet all these challenges. So I think I'll just stop here and hand it back to David.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you. I think it's incredibly valuable when risk managers, those involved in risk in the banks, come in and talk to us and in a sense let us know how they are responding to things. It helps us all get together. I've always said I think risk management in a sense is not a competitive sport. It's very valuable for us to share our information. Okay, so we'll move on to the Q&A session now. We've got about 15 minutes that we can spend on Q&A. So I remind you, please, any questions, please put them in the chat box. I see there's a Q&A box as well, but I think we're using the chat box for this there. Any questions? And in particular, I think it'd be valuable that we have Brian online, a member of a bank, to ask him some questions. I'm now going to move on to some of the questions that have come through. First question I think is for you, Shauna, or possibly Brian as well. The question is that both the US and the European Union have delayed Basel III. Do you believe they will actually implement Basel III, i.e. is it going to take place on the date that we think it's going to go? Shauna, perhaps I could ask you to answer that one first.
Sure. I think despite what's happened with the diluted LCR rules and the delays in Basel III in both the U.S. and Europe, I believe that Basel III will ultimately be implemented, not necessarily in the original time frame, but perhaps it will be delayed even further. The reason is that a lot of the countries, especially some of the Asian countries, they've already implemented Basel III, so it's a little too late for these major economies to say, oh, sorry, I'm not going to abide by Basel III. I think the Asian regulators will put a lot of pressure on the U.S. and Europe to get their act together and comply with Basel III. I think ultimately it's not going to be Basel III in its original rigid complex form. It'll be a simpler version and definitely a more diluted version.
Brian, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I think in some sense I think the criticism of all these rules are inevitably they are just far too complex to comply with. So nobody actually knows, even if the banks actually put in millions of dollars, thousands of people, whether it will actually make the system safer, right? So I think that Basel Committee heard about it. That's why you heard the speech from the chairman of Basel Committee 2 days ago saying that there will be another task force that will be formed to see whether there will be actually any room for simplification without sacrificing the spirit of some of these rules. So again, in short, I think there's certain willingness to implement. However, the final form might not be exactly what we're seeing today.
It certainly fuels the feelings of indecision that we have out there. It's interesting that it seems to be now not the what I'd call the Western economies pushing things to go through. They seem to be dragging their heels, where it's the rest of the world that is saying, "Come on, guys, you've got to get this organized." Next question for Brian, I believe. There, Brian, how how the local liquidity regulations are likely to evolve with the global Basel III liquidity rules. So presumably the question is there how local regulatory changes in liquidity are going to change following on from Basel III. Could I ask you, Brian?
Yeah, thanks, David. I think it's a very interesting question because the liquidity rules is actually much more diverse. Before Basel III, you can see Basel III liquidity ratios, the LCR, the NSFR, as standardized rules. These are one-size-fits-all rules, right? Once you determine your so-called contractual cash flows, the Basel rules will actually impose the behavioralization, the inflows and outflows, the rollover to come up with numbers that enter into the computation of these ratios. So it's a standardized approach. The liquidity rules, particularly in Asia, are still very, very, very different from locations to locations. For example, people might know that for Singapore, Singaporean banks, for the liquidity requirement, they're actually on an internal model-based approach for almost a decade. So again, for Singapore. So again, how to converge the existing rule to the standardized rules of Basel remains to be a challenge. I think in Hong Kong, which are probably more banks than Singapore, the HKM already have some proposal on the table saying that they want banks to be split into tier one and two. The bigger one, the bigger tier, would have to comply with the full Basel requirements, and then the less complex tier might have to comply with a modified set of liquidity rules from the HKM 8, which is not exactly Basel, but probably more resembling to the current liquidity rules of HKMA. Again, they're trying to again blend an apple with orange, and hopefully they will meet at some point. So again, I think the is a very good question, and in fact we actually still don't know exactly how these would evolve. So to be frank, every single country, the purpose of regulations can be slightly different. For example, in Indonesia, actually banks will be given a loan deposit ratio, both cap and a floor, right? We all understand nothing like cap means you don't basically lend too much beyond your funding source and means from deposit. But setting a floor means the regulator expects the banks to lend as well to the economy. So again, all these would have to interact with the new Basel rules, and I think that they remain the challenge to all regulators.
A challenge, Shauna. From your experience working with across many countries in the region, do you wish to add to that?
I think Brian did a good job of summarizing things. In terms of the liquidity rules, what he mentioned about the HKMA, I find very interesting that despite the dilution of the rules, HKMA is telling the banks still abide by the earlier version. We're also seeing this in other countries. So it seems that the new rule, the more relaxed rule, it comes a little too late.
Thank you, Shauna. Thank you. This next question is one that I'm really going to enjoy. I think it's targeted initially for you, Shauna, but I'd like to hear from Brian as well. Do you agree that Basel's trading book proposal to replace VAR with expected shortfall? Basel's trading book proposal to respect VAR with expected shortfall? As somebody who's been sort of criticizing VAR for a long time, I'm wondering whether I'm going to be caught out with this expected shortfall. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
I disagree with Basel. I think most of the banks that are pretty sophisticated, they're already measuring expected shortfall. So to replace VAR completely with expected shortfall, I think would be quite damaging. VAR has its usefulness, and I think most people are aware of the weaknesses of R, but still it provides a useful metric for most people to understand. And in terms of expected shortfall, there are a lot of criticisms against that. For example, how are you going to backtest it? That's almost virtually impossible. So there are weaknesses in both areas, and that's why risk management, it's not just about looking at one number, it's about looking at a lot of different numbers, and most importantly, using experience and common sense.
Do you think that it's possible, especially in the calculation of capital, which is seems to be Basel's main concern these days, is it possible to use VAR and expected shortfall in the same organization? Shauna, sorry.
Yes. The short answer, no. I think you're going to have to take one or another. You're looking at two different measures, and trying to combine them doesn't really make any sense. You're looking at 99% probability, or you're looking at 1% probability, and to mix the two doesn't seem realistic to me.
I can see it's going to cause problems for the non-quantitative people like me. Brian, would you like to add to that at all?
Okay. As an institution, actually, all my VAR limits are actually set in expected shortfall terms for 5 years already. So living with expected shortfall is not a problem at all. I think the key thing is how the new rule books are going to be crafted so that there's no big gaps between. That's the calibration exercise mentioned by Basel. Because currently under Basel 2.5, you have the VAR, and then you have the stress VAR, and you have an ILC, and then you have still the 10-day holding period, and plus the minimum capital multiplier of 3, 4, 5, whatever, right? And so if you replace in VAR plus stress VAR by a stress expected shortfall, the stress period you choose are not likely to compensate for VAR plus stress VAR plus times 3 or 4, whatever, right? So that's why the market liquidity horizon is going to kick in, right? Instead of a 10-day uniformly applied for Basel 2.5, they might set, okay, minimum 10 days, but maximum 1 year, whatever, right? Then you have to model it, either by modeling the input or modeling the output, whatever. They have different proposals on that in the paper. Now, in the end of the day, yes, they are still not comfortable, then they actually need to constrain the diversification between either deaths or risk factors. But the question that puzzles a lot of us is, in the end of the day, they're basically calibrating a number by all these needs. Right? In the end of the day, how can you actually put it to in use? The back testing is another challenge, but it's very easy perhaps if you're just crafting the regulations, you can compute your failure rate charge based on expected shortfall or stress expected shortfall. However, the back testing can still be on a point estimate of VAR, right? Because if you have the risk engines to run the full loss distributions, you can measure at different confidence level the VAR and expected shortfall, whatever, and so that you can actually use it for different purposes. So for setting back testing, fit for purpose testing, or at the same time from computation of failure one charge. I think that is theoretically not coherent, but the regulator might take a shortcut after hearing the fact that it's very difficult to back test coherently. Now the in-use part is actually the I find it most difficult to comply with, because the banks internally would definitely use very different metrics, even though it's actually an expected shortfall based. However, the diversification, the market liquidity horizon, I don't think those are all well agreed upon throughout the industry, so that the difference between Pillar 1 and Pillar 2 gap would even be larger.
Okay, thank you, Brian. And I'm sorry, I think this one's coming straight back to you, Brian. A question on how will the level playing field be assured effectively for Basel III? assume assume this goes back to your conversation of balance in the regulatory changes, and particularly in liquidity risk. So how will Basel III assure a global level playing field?
I think, I mean, the FSB made it very clear they have all these financial stability assessment programs so that they send their coin board to each of the countries and make sure that the implementation timeline, the interpretation of the rules, the kind of national discretion they give are actually really not deviating from the principles that they set. I think that exercise has started more than a year ago. So essentially, it's audit of the national regulator. I think from a bank perspective, I think it's the most important thing is to engage your regulator and voice out through all your quantitative and studies. If you find things that is really have any unintended consequences for your business strategy, that you are actually penalized under these new rules, you just have to voice it out to your regulator, and they can be your representatives, or you have to talk to your finance minister to go the finance minister's route.
Thank you, Brian. It does seem to be an issue, though. It seems to be something that that people do need to think about, especially those trading or banking across different areas. Shauna, do you have anything to add on the issue of the level playing fields? Is it something an issue you've come across in working across the region?
I haven't come across it in the region, just in terms of the readings. That's just a major issue right now. How the rules are going to manifest themselves throughout the various countries. Right now, we have so many inconsistencies. For example, we have the U.S., the Dodd-Frank Act, it prohibits the use of external credit ratings. Meanwhile, the Basel III rules relies on them for some of the capital calculations. So there's just a lot of inconsistencies that need to be ironed out, and I honestly don't know how that's going to be done.
Hopefully something will come out of the Davos and the other meetings that are going on. I think I've got time for two more questions coming in there. So I've got a fairly specific one for you, Brian, and then I think a fairly general one that's going to come to you, Shauna, which really I think is asking you to look into the future. Brian, the question is, what can you do for trading book market risk if you're not actually using the IMA today?
Again, I think the whole point is your risk management infrastructure, first of all, has to be there to allow you to help you to assist you to manage your risks, okay, in terms of the accuracy, the effectiveness, I think that is something very basic to the institutions. If they want to actually take trading risks, their end-to-end market risk process has to be there, right? All the way coming from the confirmation, the booking of trades, the P&L processes, the reconciliation of accounts, the market risk engines. I mean, all these are actually tightly linked together. Of course, last but not least, of course, the product approval procedures. And once you find out that you need to have all the pieces in place to manage an end-to-end process for market risk, then the requirements on the engine, the infrastructure, would be there, right? So I think the regulators would probably agree that if you as a bank actually can put in all these requirements, then the engine itself, whether it be used for pillar one purpose, I mean, that would be subject to a separate regulatory inspection, but they will also come in to assess it through the ICAP process and all the other pillar two process as well.
Thank you, Brian. Last question coming up there. fairly quickly, Sean, because I think this could go on for a long time. I think this question comes from the early part of your presentation. Where do you feel will the next major crisis is going to come from?
I think it will come from the emerging countries. China, a lot has been said about the shadow banking, and we really don't know how much of a crisis situation it may be. We do know that the Chinese banks were in trouble towards the end of the 1990s. So if history does repeat itself, then I would say they might be up for problems towards 2018, 2020. Also, another region that I foresee problems, Brazil. There's been a new class, they call it the C class, and all these people who didn't have access to credit now do, and as most people, they are overspending now that they have all this credit, and I think the banks are going to have to contend with this big situation at a later date. So those are the two countries I would say.
Thank you, Shauna. I'm not going to ask you that question, Brian, because as a banker, somebody may quote you later on, say that DBSA, the next crisis is. I'm going to have to call it a close now. I'd just like to thank both Brian and Shauna for their excellent presentations and for the time they've taken to shed light on the latest Basel developments. Personally, I feel there's still a lot to confirm. We've seen the recent relaxation of the timetable for liquidity requirements. Looks like we can expect further securitization changes. And as mentioned, we see value at risk being challenged. And there's also committees that I'm aware of at work on operational risk weightings and possibly some of the operational risk requirements. I think Brian made a very good point regarding the issue that we now have with the availability of enough high-quality liquid assets and the availability of deposits coming in, the competition for these. I see a lot of criticism globally of regulators in the recent summit at Davos, saw the global banks going on the offensive. But I think it'll be a long time before bankers and the voting public will be on the same page. This is a fight that I don't see the global banks winning. I think the one thing that's inevitable, we will see more, not fewer, regulatory requirements. Capital requirements will go up rather than down. And as I think both Brian and Shauna mentioned there, the number of pages of regulation will grow and grow. So actually, where does it leave the banks, the risk managers, the IT developers, yourselves? The changes are extensive and expensive, and wait until everything is 100% certain is just not an option. Many countries have already laid down the rules. There are still changes coming down. I think the key for banks is understanding, planning, and preparing, but retaining flexibility in their projects. It's definitely a situation where early movers will have the advantage, and missing regulatory deadlines is just not an option and will have serious reputational consequences for all. So really what I'm saying is, get your planning in, your preparation in early, but be ready to change. So once again, I'd like to thank our speakers, and I'd like to thank you all for attending. Goodbye, and good luck with your development.